This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Washington insider Dave Leventhal joining us on the WBEN Trocare College live line this morning. Dave, we are in the final sprint, 1 week to go, hearing the final messages from the candidates, and seems like it's all about the politics of fear, fear what the other will do if elected.
Yeah, you better believe it. And you're going to hear a lot about fear today. We've got a number of different events and moments that are just going to happen here on Tuesday, say nothing of the days to come between now and Election Day a week from today. Let's first start with Donald Trump. He's going to be in Mar-a-Lago. He's going to have a press conference this morning. We know how press conferences and Donald Trump work. It's likely going to be freewheeling. Lots of questions about lots of things. Expect that he's going to be asked about the Madison Square Garden rally in New York City, where there were some pretty eye-opening, some racist things said, and this is coming at a time when Donald Trump has been doing great with Latino voters, and a couple of openers for him said some pretty strong things about Puerto Rico, for example, and we're going to get some more action in Allentown, Pennsylvania from Donald Trump when he holds a rally there in what is a majority Latino area of Pennsylvania, one of those seven key swing states. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris here in Washington, D.C., is going to be giving a rally on the Ellipse, the site of Donald Trump's speech on January 6, 2021. The symbolism, I need not say another word, but this is a super high-risk, high-reward type of event for Kamala Harris, who, if it goes really well for her, is going to be potentially a prolific, profound, powerful speech that is going to meet the moment. If it goes the other direction for her, it's not going to sound quite like it does meet the moment and could fall flat. And that could be a big boon for Donald Trump.
It seems like there's fewer polls this election. You know, I was expected to be blitzed with them, especially this past Sunday. But I don't know, Dave, I just wasn't. And is there a reason for that?
There have been a number of polls, but some of them, you've got polls of all different sorts, and I think at the national level, at this point, 7 days away, polls don't really matter all that much anymore. I mean, we know the race is incredibly close. All the polls in the seven swing states from Nevada all the way to Georgia are basically showing that the race is a dead heat. So it really comes down to what the candidates are going to be able to do to turn out their voters, first and foremost, and secondarily to change the minds of those handful of voters, relatively speaking, who still have not made up their minds. We do have definitely a few October surprises, I think, that have popped up in a major way that could shift the winds here. One has to wonder if the Latino vote question is going to loom large for Donald Trump. And Kamala Harris making her final argument, you mentioned fear and loathing and whatnot. There's a big question as to whether she has the right strategy here, that she's focusing too much on Donald Trump and not enough on her own campaign and what she wants to do with the economy and jobs and national security and international affairs and the border. So I think we're going to find out a lot about those questions tonight with the candidates' two respective public appearances. But at least in terms of the polling, any polls that we have from here on in are probably going to say largely the same thing. And let's remember, too, Brian, that any poll that's taken is already old when it comes out, in the sense that it's not reflecting what's happening today, but a survey that was taken a few days ago.
You know, on polling, it seems historically that Trump has underpolled when you go back to previous two elections. Do you think they're better at that this time?
Yeah, polling, I mean, we could do a whole show on it and the opportunities and the costs of polling. And, one thing about polling is if you look at a national poll, a national poll isn't going to tell you a whole lot about this particular race because the national polls are going to wrap in what people in California feel, and that's a state that's overwhelmingly going to go to Kamala Harris. We know that. It's not going to wrap in a state like South Carolina, which is overwhelmingly going to go to Donald Trump, and in about 40-plus other states where we already know the outcome of the presidential race. If you're going to look at polls at this point in time, look at the polls in Wisconsin. Look at the polls in Michigan. Look at the polls, of course, in Pennsylvania and the other swing states. Those are the ones that matter, but they are, again, all showing basically the same thing, that they are within the statistical margin of error, that this is a toss-up, that either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump could plausibly win those states. And what polls don't capture is how well the get out the vote effort is going to be for the two campaigns, and whether there's going to be some final movement in one direction or another for the candidates, for those slice of voters, maybe in the tens of thousands across a country of hundreds of millions, that are ultimately going to determine who wins and who loses.
Dave, you spent a lot of time in political media. Washington Post under fire for not endorsing a candidate. Jeff Bezos, who owns the Post, founder of Amazon, wrote an op-ed on this titled "The Hard Truth: Americans Don't Trust the News Media." He said that we must be accurate, we must be believed to be accurate, and what presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias. And, you know, I read this op-ed and I find it hard to find many faults in it. What do you think about the endorsement game in 2024 and whether media outlets should get involved?
This is just an unmitigated dumpster fire for the Washington Post at this point, in the sense that they have reportedly lost more than 200,000 paid subscriptions as a result of this decision just in the past couple of days. I mean, that's exponentially more than a lot of newspapers across the country have as their entire subscriber base. So that is monumental. It's a right of every newspaper to endorse or to not endorse. The thing with the Washington Post is the timing of this all, that the decision to make this and the decision coming from Jeff Bezos without initial explanation, and also to, in contrast with what the editorial page wanted to do, came just days away from the election. So it was a little too late, I think, for Jeff Bezos to explain exactly what was going on here, at least in terms of his own business interests at the Washington Post. What concerns me is that there's incredible journalists doing incredible work over there, and they have no say in what any editorial page is doing, and that's the standard practice at most news organizations, where the newsroom and the opinion pages, they are separate and they are divided and they don't consult with one another.
Isn't this the trend, though, this past few years with papers, not to do the endorsing of a candidate?
Most papers still endorse, and when we think about endorsements, we're often thinking about the presidential race, but at the local level, endorsements are critical, and I think arguably much more critical if you're talking about your mayor or you're talking about the governor or something of that sort, where the endorsement is going to hold perhaps a little bit more weight. But again, it's the right of every news outlet to go ahead and make an endorsement or not, but oftentimes, if you're going to shift the way that you do things and you're going to take a different philosophy and put it into action, probably better to do that before passions are as high as they are right now, just on the doorstep of Election Day.
Hey, Dave, thanks for the time. Dave Leventhal, Washington Insider, joining us live here on WBEM.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app